Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. I am here with developer Robert Pipe. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for taking the time to do this. You're a busy person. I really appreciate when people take the time to talk, but I wanted to kind of introduce you to everybody again, because I think many people in the Mr. world know your work and use your work, but don't quite know you. So I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I wouldn't have thought that that I would fit into this talk. Oh. Because I'm probably not well known in the whole retro community.
Well, you're certainly known in the Mr. community by anybody that kind of works in the backside of things, and everybody that uses it obviously uses your stuff now with all the latest updates. So it's definitely fun to be talking to you. I do want to just remind everybody that we're on different sides of the world, so there's going to be a delay. I'm sure one of us is going to start talking at the wrong time or something. People tend to forget that doing things remotely like this is a little harder than in person, but I'm just kind of glad we're here anyway. So I guess just to give people a very quick background of yourself, what are the cores that you've created and added to on Mr.? You did the Lynx core in its entirety. I know you've added the save states for Game Boy and NES, but you've done a bunch more work as well, right?
Yes, I started with the Game Boy Advance core. It was 1.5 years ago.
Oh, when I totally forgot that you were the person that posted the Game Boy Advance core. I feel so stupid. Wow. That's an awesome core. That works really well.
So when I made it, I didn't know much about the Mr. project at all. So I posted it on Reddit, and the community said, oh, come to our Discord channel and let's talk and bring this to the Mr. And I thought maybe it's a good idea to do it, to have a larger crowd using it. And I was completely new to all this at the time.
So that was really your first conversion of emulation over to FPGA Verilog code?
So I did a Game Boy core before, but it wasn't very good. It was my first work. It could play most games, but not in the quality as the Game Boy core on the Mr.
Okay. And then you moved on to Game Boy Advance. And I remember when that came out, everybody was just shocked. No one expected that to come out so quickly. And I remember the first day I had to make some settings changes in order to get it to work on a CRT. And the next day an update was pushed where just everything worked. So not only did you get it out there, you got it updated so quickly. And it's a great core. I've never had an issue with it. I've never found any major bugs or problems. I mean, most of the cores are pretty stable, but if you stare at the stuff as long as I have, you could tend to pick out a lot of the inaccuracies. And I had a really good time playing the Game Boy Advance core. I just thought it came out great.
Yeah, thanks. I guess when it came out, there were still quite some games that were not running perfect at that time. But it got improved over time. I spent a lot of time afterwards also. But when I first posted it, I made sure it works already. So I didn't want to post something, so I'm working on it and maybe I will release something in months or in a year or something like this. So I made sure things are running. So first game's working. And I always made this decision afterwards. The first core now I posted that I'm working on it without any game running was the WonderSwan recently. Mm-hmm. But I was quite sure that I can do it and I don't run into too much problems at that point. So I thought that it's possible this time.
Yeah, I think that's a smart move because if nothing else, it removes a lot of pressure for yourself. So like, what if you released Game Boy Advance when it was barely working and then you said, yeah, no problem, I'll fix it in a month. And then something important happened and, you know, you didn't have the time to. Now you have all these people saying, what happened? It's been a month. How come the core isn't updated? So just for your own well-being, I like that idea of, you know, get it out there in a stable spot. And then that way people could use it. And if you want to update it, you know, you could do that at your leisure.
Yeah, also it's much better for all the bug reports that come in. So if it's already in a state where I think I can get to from on my own, that's great. So if I still have work to do and people report bugs, I also see that doesn't help me much. But if they come up with the bugs I haven't seen and I wouldn't have seen, so that's a big help then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine if there's anything lingering, sometimes hearing new bugs might be clues as to other things that you were trying to finish off on it as well. So, because it's impossible to test every part of every game by one developer, you know, so having so many other people test it, it's pretty cool. It gives you, you know, a lot of beta testers, I guess.
Yes, that was great when the GBA core came out. There was one guy in an old Mr. forum, and he tested 1,600 games in a few days.
Wow.
And he gave me a list of every game not working. This was so great. It was a huge help at this point.
Wow, that's awesome. I absolutely love the retro game community. We have so many good people in it. So that's cool to hear.
Yeah.
Now, when that core came out, there was talk of how it was made, and I tried to explain it, but I'm not a developer, so I get the concepts, but it's a little over my head. So this isn't the way that core was designed, if I'm right, wasn't an exact one-to-one of all of the chips that were on the Game Boy Advance, but more along the actual real-world implementation. So, you know, how... I'm not even explaining it right now. So basically, it's... you're emulating the entire console as a whole and not going down to focus on each individual chip. Am I right about that?
Well, I'm doing the individual parts.
Oh.
But on the GBA, when I first thought about it, I read about the memory access timing it has. Mm-hmm. And it was very fast. And I thought, I cannot fit this into the SD RAM, which the Mister has. I would need very low latency RAM to do this. Today, I know it would have been possible to do it, but at this point, I didn't know about it. I was still quite new to all this. I started with FPGA course maybe half a year ago when I started with the GBA, so I didn't have the experience. So what I did was not emulate or rebuilding the GBA at the instruction level. So I did rebuild it at instruction level instead of cycle level. So one instruction may take several cycles, and only this amount of cycles is calculated. So it's not every internal component advances every single step like in a real system it would. So instead it advances with one instruction. If it takes one cycle, it's one, but maybe if it takes 10 cycles, the component advances by 10 cycles. This way, I was able to increase the overall speed of the Game Boy Advance. And this way, I could live with slower memory. So if the memory is slow, it maybe runs a little slower. And afterward, it catches up. So it counts how many cycles have passed or should have passed and how many it could reach in speed, and then it catches up to this point again. So the difference is very small. It's around 100 cycles maximum, and typically this is not reached, and you will never notice that. Mm. But it has some problems with getting some of the smaller components completely accurate in rebuild. So if I would have done it today, I would made it different than this time. But overall, I think every game is now running. It passes most of the critical tests, and it's quite okay even in this state. But it could have been slightly better even.
That was a great way to describe it. I feel like, you know, I kind of... whenever I'm able to explain something, that's when I know I've got a better grasp on it. And I feel like I could almost explain it now. I think that was the really clear way of visualizing it. So you said you were going back and kind of going to the other pieces and also kind of adding towards it, adding to the core over time as well, right? I think I've seen improvements pop up and bug fixes over the past 6 months or a year or something like that.
Yes, I did a lot of bug fixes also with accuracy, with timing. And I added quite some features to the Game Advance Core. So when I was done with the Game Advance Core, I didn't want to do anything related to the core internals at this point. It was too much of that. I want to try something new. So the first I did was the save state feature for the Game Advance. Mm. And I mainly did it at this time to fix bugs.
No. Oh,
so
okay.
I usually work completely in simulation. So it's VHDL code, so hardware description language. And in a simulator, you can run the same code that runs on the FPGA on your PC. But it's way slower. So for 1 second real time to be simulated, it may take an hour. So you can't get deep into the game and test something. It will take hours, and it's far too long. So I made a save state so I can load the save state in the simulation at exactly that point where the game has a crash or some graphical artifacts come up. And that was great for fixing all the bugs. When I had the save states, most of the critical bugs I had fixed a few days later. And I didn't have any idea how to do it otherwise.
That is so awesome. A feature that so many people absolutely love ended up actually helping your development cycle.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And afterwards, I also added the high-resolution rendering, for example. So you can play games like Mario Kart in 4x resolution, which is looking far better.
Yeah.
And also some other parts.
That's very cool. What allowed you to be able to do that? Was it manipulation of the software? Because I didn't think, you know, the higher, because you're not talking about scaling the image. You're not talking about scaling the original resolution with nearest neighbor. You're actually talking about rendering in a higher resolution, right?
Yes.
So is that possible?
So the PPU, the pixel processing unit in the GBA core is there three times. It's 1x for the original resolution and 2x for the 4x resolution. And these two additional units work at double speed, so they can do the additional pixels.
Wow. You know, as much as I really, truly love the preservation parts of the Mister project, I think my favorite parts are always the stuff that can't be done on original hardware. It's just a completely unique experience. And even the silly one like composite blending on only the specific layers on the Genesis core. So if you're with Sonic standing in front of the waterfall's blurry and everything else is sharp. It's such a small thing, but it's such an easy example because it's nothing that you could ever do on an original Genesis. And, you know, what you're just talking about of high definition rendering of a Game Boy Advance game. I mean, you know, you could do that with software emulation, but it's really impressive to see in Mister. I mean, that's a very cool thing.
Yes, I also thought it's so cool when I tested this out in an emulator, and I wanted to have it in FPGA. I know it's making the FPGA really full, and it is today. It's using most of the space available for all these features I added, but I wanted to have it. I wanted to try something out.
That's awesome.
That's always fun.
So what did you move on to? What was the next that you did after Game Boy Advance?
So after the Game Boy Advance, I thought I can move to the Nintendo DS. And I worked on a core there and on another board, on a more powerful board with 2x bigger FPGA, with faster FPGA, more memory. And even there, I got stuck with implementing the 3D features. So the 2D features work and the processors work and most of the 2D only games work, but the Nintendo DS uses a lot of 3D and it's worthless without 3D. So you cannot play many games without, and it wouldn't fit with 3D on a Mister. So I thought it's not worth continuing this project. I spent maybe 3 months for that.
Oh, wow.
And at this point, when I started, I thought maybe I can do it. Maybe I can fit it in, but it didn't work out. So I had to cancel this.
So that in order for that to work, you would almost need either all software emulation or a combination of FPGA and a graphics chip on a custom board or something, right?
No, the biggest problem is really the memory. So the Nintendo DS has very much internal memory. Mm-hmm. So about triple the size of what the Mr. FPGA has. And it's used all in parallel. There are more than 10 different memories used in parallel. So you cannot do that with external RAM. It's not working well.
Okay.
And that's the main problem. So to do that, we really need FPGAs with enough memory. There are some, but they are still very expensive today.
Yeah. I mean, when you say very expensive, they're over $1,000, right?
Yes, they are over $1,200 is the cheapest board I found still today. And I guess not many people would buy that just for a Nintendo DS core. So with a small crowd and large library, you can't get the core really good, and it's not worth working on it.
And the $1,200 one can't do native 4K 60 output either. You have to go to the next model over that to get 4K. Is that right?
I'm not sure. I didn't look this up.
I could be wrong about that, because I remember talking to a few people like, is there something that we could do? Is there just a more powerful Mister for people that want those features? And the answer always came back, no. And if there was, it'd be many thousands to get this extra stuff. So, you know, just stick with the DE10 for now and see what comes down in price in the next upcoming few years, I guess.
Yes, I think it's the better solution. So if we get a really big improvement for a small price in a few years, then it's worth it. But at the current point, I don't think it's worth to go to a platform with over $1,000 price. So,
agreed. Especially because Nintendo DSs are still so cheap and available from places, whereas a lot of the other stuff that you talk about, you know, that's been implemented in the Mister is hard to get, or, you know, it's like the screens are terrible, so you have to do a screen update even if you do an original console with it. And whereas the Nintendo DSs, you could probably find one reasonably priced. You could probably find a brand new one somewhere left over for cheaper than the cost of the FPGA that would run. Yeah. So.
That's well, cool. But the reason I worked on all this handheld course is that I don't like to play on a handheld. So that's the main reason I worked on the Game Boy first and Game Boy Advance afterwards. I don't have much connection to the older consoles like the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. So I never really played on them, but I played a lot on the handhelds as a child, but I cannot do it today anymore. It's the small screen, and with my hands, it doesn't work out well.
I agree completely. I would always rather play, even because some handheld games do look a little strange on a big TV. So I took your, which we'll get to in a bit, but I took your Lynx Core and I put that on a small 10-inch monitor, and then used a real size controller, and it was awesome. It was like a halfway between, you know, because it's much bigger than the original screen, bigger and better, but it also, it wasn't too big that everything was stretched and giant. So, but you know, there's no wrong way. Whatever people prefer is awesome, but that I definitely enjoy doing it that way.
Yeah.
So after NDS, what was the next one that you moved on after that?
So after the Nintendo DS, I worked on performance improvements for the AO486 core, so the computer core, and I added caches to it and improved the internal calculation speed, the latencies of all the pipelining. I didn't touch very deep into the core itself. It's mainly all the memory interface I worked on to make it faster. So it was, I think in the end, it was 4 times faster than at the start. And it enabled quite some games to be played.
I remember when that speed increase was implemented, because a few people know how much I love the fighting game Mortal Kombat, and they said, hey, check this out. There's a 486 core running the PC version of Mortal Kombat 2. So, you know, if you want Mortal Kombat on your Mister now, that's how you could do it. And I was so blown away by that. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, So I tried to improve this further, but it didn't work out. So I skipped working further on this project. I know that Alexei did quite some more work on it mm-hmm. afterwards with all the VGA stuff he did and a lot of other parts. I think it was a little motivation for him to have the score faster now, and it's worth to do all these features. And it was a good result overall.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's cool, too, because when you collaborate on stuff like that, sometimes just having somebody come in and help lights a fire. You know, you get more excited about it because now you're not stuck in the same spot. Now you're moving forward, and it does tend to make things exciting.
Yeah.
After 486, there were more save states, right?
So after 486, I did a break for some months and tried something completely different. So it was related to web development. Hmm. So I always wanted to do that. But in the end, it was like all the projects I did in the past, no one would use it ever. So I came back to working on the Mister project because it's used. And it doesn't feel like you're working on something and it's just stuck somewhere in a corner and nobody looks at it. That's not worth it in the end.
I feel like that 75% of RetroRGB.com is stuff that I spent days and days making sure I got it right. And maybe once a month, somebody will click on it and go, oh, cool, this is what I need. But it mostly just gets ignored. So I feel your pain. What was the web project about? Was it game related or was it just something totally different that you wanted to work
on? Yes, I was trying to do a 3D game.
Oh.
So I did some 2D games before I start with FPGA development, and not something really big, so maybe used by a few hundred people. But the 3D project was too huge in the end, and still not good compared to standards today. So probably no one would really want to play it. So I put it to the side, and I went back to the Game Boy Core, which already existed and was in really good shape before. So I thought I could add some of the features I already had in my Game Boy Core from more than 1 year earlier. So that was the fast forward feature and the save states.
That's awesome. I remember when those were implemented too, because both of those are pretty neat. You know, it's all of the advantages of a software emulator, but you're using hardware emulation. So it's kind of the best of both worlds when stuff like that's implemented.
Yes, it was really important for me to see if the fast forward could work on a Psyche accurate core like the Game Boy Core was, because I always thought it must be very difficult because you cannot just make it faster, and what to do with all the memory accesses and how could it even work. And it's really good. I found a way so I could later on when I made the Lynx core, I could also design it that way and not like the Game Boy Advance before. I wouldn't have to choose a design that has some weaknesses just to get these features in, which I really want. So the course I do, I will always have at least fast forward and save states inside.
That's very cool. What do you use fast forward for? Is it mostly development stuff just to skip to a faster part or a further part in the game? Or do you like speeding your games up? Or what's the main use for you personally?
So the main use, which I want to, because I wanted to have it in the game earlier on, was some of the games, some of the role-playing games or the Pokemon games, which I played as a child. I always played them faster because they are so slow. If you can't speed them up, it costs me hours to play them, and it's not fun for me anymore to play at the slow speed. So I initially made it for that, but today, especially on the Lynx core, I use it mainly for getting faster to a point in the game where I want to test something.
That's awesome. Both are cool reasons. I didn't play very much text-based stuff growing up. I used, you know, I liked side-scrolling or top-down adventure games, which are mostly fast-paced. But I could completely see a couple of them where I would have loved a fast-forward feature to skip through certain things. Like, even people that just want to play Super Metroid again, I love the opening. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was really cool. But I've seen it 1,000 times. I don't need to see it again. I could just fast-forward right through that. Yeah. So, yeah, that's cool. So, moving on from the Game Boy, what came after that? Was it, did you work on another project or did you jump right onto the Lynx after that?
I got to the Lynx after that. Yes, I started with the Lynx, but I didn't announce it too early. So I think I announced it when the first game was running on the FPGA already. So quite late in the project. So I think from there on, it was maybe 2-3 weeks until the first beta release. But I was quite sure at this point I will get the things up and running in time.
So how did you start getting into that? I mean, did you write a software emulator like you were kind of doing with the WonderSwan, or did you already have data out there? I mean, I'm always fascinated at how people get started with such a monumental task of recreating a game console, you know?
Yes, I always start with all the course I did. I always started with a software emulator before. When I first did the first core I did was the Game Boy. And I also did the software emulator before, and it was the first emulator I ever worked on. And I had no idea how such a thing could work at all. So I got stuck in every situation and couldn't really finish it. And then I came to a conclusion that I need to look at existing emulators. I really must get to the knowledge already available and not find out everything myself again. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have already found all the details. For example, for the Game Boy, it's very, very good analyzed. And you can find all the details on existing emulators, and documentation is good, but if you want to see the details, it's sometimes very helpful to look at existing emulators. So what I did was taking, let's say, the calculation output of another emulator and compare it to mine and to see where the differences are. Mm-hmm. To get to the point where it was working well. But with the Game Boy and with the Game Boy Advance emulator I made, initially, they were not very accurate. Because I at least for the Game Boy, I didn't have in mind to bring it to FPGA later. It wasn't my initial goal with the Game Boy. Later on, I decided to do it, but I didn't want it to do this initially. So it wasn't meant to be brought to FPGA. And also the GBA, the design, for example, the GBA CPU is pipelined with 3 pipeline stages, but the emulator wasn't. So getting all this information to the FPGA was another huge step because the design was very different. And the next time I did this with the Lynx is the emulator, I made it already in mind how the FPGA would look like and what it can do. So in FPGA, you cannot access, let's say, a single memory several times in a clock cycle. It's not possible. Some emulators can do that. So you don't keep the fetch data, just throw it away and fetch it again. It's no problem. But on FPGA, it's not possible. So when I made the Lynx emulator, I already had this in mind, what is possible on the hardware, and only design this stuff in so that it will be. So it's always sound a bit bad if you call it porting an emulator. But in case you already write a software emulator to do only things a hardware could also do, I think it's fair to do it this way.
That sounds like a really intelligent way to approach the problem to me. I know I'd heard some people talk about different cores, and Mostly it was just people repeating what other people said, and they didn't know what they were talking about, but they made negative comments about, oh, you know, this core is mostly just a ported emulator. But I mean, I don't understand what the problem with that is, even if that was true. If it's working and you're not adding any lag to the image and, you know, and everything looks and sounds okay, what's the difference? And from a preservation point of view, I totally understand that it would be nice to have a carbon copy, you know, in Verilog of every single chip on every game console. That would be nice. But if your goal is to enjoy games as accurate to the original as possible, I can't see how that could ever be a negative thing. And it sounds like your test environment, that just sounds like a really brilliant way to approach it. Let me have a software emulator that doesn't take an hour to render 1 second of video, so I could actually just use it in real time. And I see in the videos that you post, a lot of it's in fast forward mode anyway, so you could scroll through a lot of that stuff. It sounds like a really great way to go about doing it.
Yes, and it's also if you port it to the FPGA and have the same logic inside, they are compatible. So what I do is I create save states on the hardware and I can debug them in the emulator because they are compatible to be used there. And I can set breakpoints and debug stuff very easy there. So it's helpful. And for some things, it's maybe more helpful to debug it on the hardware where it's running faster. So it's to have multiple possibilities to work on these problems.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned debugging it on real hardware. How would you do that with something like the Lynx? Did you use a ROM cart with a save state feature? Or did you just remember where in the game? Or did I hear you wrong? I'm sorry if I did. There's a lot of noise outside.
So for debugging, I can use the software emulator, I can use the simulation, and I can use the FPGA core, but also the real hardware. Mm-hmm. So the first thing, if someone reports a bug, is I put the same game on a flash card, run it on the real hardware, and see if the bug is also there. And we found quite some strange bugs on Lynx games where all thought that cannot be in a real game, but it is. And so I always do that.
That's cool. I've run into that too, where I had, I think it was the Sega CD core. The first game I loaded, within 30 seconds, something crashed on it. And I sent a screenshot to my friend and they were laughing like, no, that's a known bug that happens on a real Sega CD. That means that it's an accurate recreation of the same bug that happens in the original. So it's kind of fun to see some factory bugs that are still left over in some of these games.
Yeah, but you always have to look, especially graphical bugs. They are very common on older systems to have some glitches, some graphical glitches that happen also on the real system. But you often cannot see them on the old screens with screen lag and several frames combined together. You cannot see what's happening there, not so easily. And sometimes it's difficult to find that. But I always try with the real hardware first. And I'm happy I finally got a flash card for the WonderSwan now, which is very difficult to get. Yeah. So I can try games there too.
Yeah, the group that makes it are very nice people. You should have just emailed them directly and say, hey, I'm working on the FPGA core. Could you put one aside for me? They probably would. So, but... So with the Lynx, is that a console that you played as a kid, or were you just interested in recreating it? You know, what made you choose the Lynx?
So honestly, when I was working on the Game Boy core and the new features, I thought about what could be next. And there were some systems left, and I looked, the handhelds are always interesting to me to work on them, because I don't like playing on a handheld itself. But there were three handhelds mainly which I looked at, which was the Lynx, the WonderSwan, and Neo Geo Pocket. Mm-hmm. And I decided to go for the Lynx at this point because of the library of the games. I always thought having a library with many or most of them being Japanese only is very difficult to work with. So I decided the Lynx is all games are English, so I can easily work on them. The library isn't too large, but also it sold most from all the three systems. So it can't be that bad. So let's look at it.
That's very cool. In playing this now, do you have a favorite game or two on the links that you like a lot now that you're able to play it on a big TV and everything?
So it's probably California Games. I played it together with my daughter. She was crazy about it and played the BMX part for hours. And there's some other games, but what I really miss on the links is some role-playing games or some other games which you can play for longer, which are not that arcade-type games. So I'm not the one really to play this arcade games. It's not my style of game I like.
It's funny because I think my favorite for that is California Games as well. And I believe Raiden was ported to that. I don't know if that was a fan-made one or if that was an official one, but I definitely played it. And the vertical or the rotation of the screen worked perfect. So, you know, it emulated that. But for handhelds, I did always really appreciate the whole, you know, I have a few minutes to kill. I always want to be doing something. I'm kind of hyper. So let me just grab this, turn it on, play a game for 5 minutes and turn it off. Whereas, you know, I do love getting sucked into a nice adventure game or something, but I often don't have the time. So I really appreciate being able to flip that on. And in fact, I have the mini Mr. Cade that I built. It's a little arcade machine with a JAMA adapter in it. And that's always hooked up, whereas all of my other stuff is in a state of disarray. So when your core came out, I walked over to that, flipped it on, and was playing California Games on the Lynx core on a little arcade machine. And it was just so neat because every time I was like, I want to try that Lynx core again. And, you know, I would just have access to it immediately, be able to play a few moments of a game, and just I really liked that I got to have that experience without dedicating hours. So I like both, but California Games was definitely it. And they have a couple other games in that library that are fun, like quick fun games that if you have a mister, definitely take the time to go through that and see for yourself. So, this might be a stupid question, so excuse me if it is, but in the screen rotation of the Atari Lynx, does that add any lag when you're using the output of the analog output or direct mode HDMI? So basically inside the core itself, I'm not talking about any of the buffering on the output side. Because I know with other rotation, you have to buffer one frame in order for it to draw it sideways, because obviously, you know, you're drawing it this way and then the other way. Does it work that way with the Lynx, or is it just the way the console or the handheld's made allows you to do that a different way?
So for the Lynx, it's very special because the Lynx has no direct graphic hardware to output. It's drawing to a frame buffer, everything. So while it has some graphical features, these features all draw to a frame buffer. And this frame buffer is copied out with direct memory access to the display on the real Lynx. So you always have this frame buffer, and you always have a little bit of lag probably from this frame buffer access. Also, the Lynx games are often running at lower frame rate. So sometimes it's only 20 hertz or maybe even only 15. So you probably don't notice the lag that much because the frame rate is low. Mm-hmm. But as it's all a frame buffer, it doesn't really matter if it's rotated or not.
So that's interesting. So when you're talking about don't notice the lag, if the original writes to a frame buffer anyway, that's actually going to be the same on the original handheld as it would be in the FPGA core. So if one extra frame is buffered, I wouldn't call that lag just because that's the exact experience you get on the original. So adding the rotation doesn't add any lag over the original would if you just turned it sideways. So that's cool. That's interesting. I didn't realize that a console that old drew everything to a frame buffer. I thought that mostly started with consoles after it, but I'm not.
Yeah, it was very special. I don't think any other system of that time has that. I haven't heard of any. But another thing for the latency is that the display of the Lynx combines three images. So it's so slow. You see two old images and a new one. So probably you will have less lag if you play it on a Mister than on the real Lynx, because with such a slow screen, it's probably much more laggy on the old screen than if you have the image directly.
One of the things I would love to do, if I ever get out of the city and get a place with a basement so I could set up test equipment, I would love to build a black box and put a camera inside with handhelds and test the exact amount of time from a button press to movement on the screen, and then test them with their replacement screens and test them on the Mister. Because I have a feeling that a lot of these handhelds are actually going to be more reactive, so less total latency start to finish using the newer screens and the FPGA builds of this stuff. So that's pretty, that's a project for the future, but that's something I'm just very curious about. And I hope people would want to watch that video too. So I'll get to that in the future, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that it's also the reason why the frame buffering we have in the GBA or in the Game Boy Core isn't that bad. You don't notice it that much because the old screen was so slow, it combines two images. And it's not that much of an issue to have a frame buffer there and add maybe on average half a frame on delay.
Yeah, I've done a lot of testing with gamers that are far more talented than I am. I'm not even that good at games, and half a frame, I think everybody has kind of unanimously said that that's pretty much zero. In your mind as you're playing, if something's been tested at, 8 milliseconds or less, especially once you start getting under that 5, 4, it doesn't affect gameplay in the slightest. It's really once you start to pass a frame, and that's not even reactive. So that's not like, those games where you hear a noise and you have to press a button, that's reactive. Whereas when you're playing games and you have your moves memorized and your muscle memory is going through these, and like Tetris, you see the piece come in, so you know exactly what to do with your hands. That's the type of stuff where pro gamers start to notice a difference. But under 8 milliseconds, I don't think anybody's ever been able to prove that they noticed a difference. Of course, some people like to use it as an excuse when they lose a match, but I don't think anybody with integrity has ever said, has ever proven in a test that anything under that is it. So that, I would describe these cores just from a description point of view as zero lag, even if you want to dig into the technical of them, just because I want to make sure, like when you say it, you're the developer, so we appreciate all the technical info, but when I say it, I just want people to know that they don't have to worry about their experience. It's not like they plugged their Mister into a pound cable or something. Like the total output experience is great. So, did we cover everything with the Lynx core? Because there were so many cool things. I just found myself going back to that every time I turned on my Mister, just because I thought it was neat. I liked experiencing the games like that. I had one with the VGA output, but there was just something about all the extra features. You had did you have scan lines available for those as well, right? You had a CRT mode or something?
There's a 240p mode, which doubles the original resolution and gives this with some little black bars, so you can use it on a CRT. And it was quite difficult to develop that because I had someone else testing it. I don't have analog outboard. I don't have any CRT here, so I couldn't test at all. So I prepared the build and someone else tested it and told me with pictures, so the image is too far on the left. It must go more to the right. And it took some builds, but we managed to get it right, I think.
That's funny, because I think when the first day it was released, it was in the lower left corner of the screen. And then after another another update, it was perfectly centered. We got to fix that, though. I'll see if I can get you an RGB monitor, even a small one if you don't have a lot of space, and an I/O board for your Mister. I'm going to make sure we can't have you not having all the tools you need. I'll talk to my friends out where you are and see if we can hook you up with those, though. Because I think while most people probably game on flat panels, those of us who do enjoy CRTs very much really appreciate when developers take the time to do the analog out modes on these as well. So yeah, whatever we could do to get you the tools you need, I'll see if I can hook you up.
Yeah, it's quite difficult with the handhelds because of the lower resolution. It often doesn't fit well with the CRT resolution. So for a gamer, for example, I'm not sure how. Does it look good on a CRT? It's probably a small screen. You cannot just double the size because it's too large then.
Right. So the easy answer is yes, it definitely looks good because anybody that played these on original hardware is already used to seeing it centered, or in the case of like the Super Game Boy with the borders. So if you'd never seen a portable game on a console before, you might go, well, that's weird. You know, it doesn't fill the screen. But anybody that's ever used a Super Game Boy, the game, you know, or any of the other things like that, I think we're all used to that. So it's not, you know, it's not a big deal. It does look good. And I know there's different ways to scale it, but it's kind of hard, especially with such blocky graphics. If you were to stretch scale it, it wouldn't quite look right. So yeah, it's, yeah, I think most people that play handhelds on monitors are just used to that though. So now I remember your Patreon post, when you had finished the Lynx Core and you said you were considering working on a few others, and then you chose, I think that's when you went back and added NES save support, right? You started working on that then as well as you were working on the WonderSwan?
Yes, when I finished the Lynx Core and I made this Patreon post, Kendrix I'm not sure you know her.
Oh,
maybe.
A good friend of mine, yeah.
Yes. She said, so you wrote you would do a save state. So why don't you start with the NES? And I always thought she wanted to do it herself. Mm-hmm. But she said, I'm fine with it. I only hope it gets done. So I start with this one. I always would like to do it because the NES Core was really well prepared for it. And it had all the things required to do it. It was a lot of work, and I really underestimated how much work it was. So it probably took me at least five times as long as on a Game Boy or on a GBA.
Oh, wow.
But overall, I think it was worth the time. And it was nice to not start after one core directly with another one, so have a little side project in between.
That's cool. Yeah, I think I just talked about that a few days ago on the podcast, and it's so cool. And there's so many people that use save states for a bunch of different reasons. I mean, you know, obviously one of the big ones is just not having to start your game over every time you need to walk away from it. But I do know a lot of speedrunners that use that for testing. There's a lot of really cool things. I know there's definitely a bunch of content creators that are going to create save states for unique parts of games so that when we need to capture our own footage, we can just load up that save state and get to the neat part of the game to capture footage. So a lot of great uses for save states. Sorry that it ended up being a lot harder than you originally anticipated, but we all appreciate it, that's for sure. So then you started work on the WonderSwan Core, which it's such an interesting handheld because most people have never even seen one in person before, but it has a decent game library. And I've heard that it has a bunch of good games on it too. I've actually never even, I think I've seen them before, but I've never actually played on one.
So it's really difficult for me because when I go through these games, I start them and they look great. I want to play them, but I cannot do it because it's Japanese. I don't understand a word of it. So I'm happy I found some games which can be played. There's a good list out there with games that can be played without understanding Japanese. And I've gone through this list and tested these games, but there are quite some more I really wanted to play, but I just can't.
Yeah, that's why I always try to make a big deal when people take the time to do translations, especially for the games that are very text heavy. I tried my best to try to promote every one of those because it's so impressive to me that people would take the time to do that. And now an awesome game that was only for people who read Japanese can now be experienced by a whole lot of other people. So that's hopefully once your core comes out, we'll start to see a bit more translations of those games. And I believe they could run on the ROM card as well. So, you know, I think it'd be pretty neat to see some of the better games get ported over with an English translation.
Yeah, there are some translation for WonderSwan games, and I looked at some, but especially for the role-playing games, it's difficult. If the battle system, for example, is translated, but all the other texts are not. So you can play this game, but you don't understand anything of what's happening there. You can fight the monsters, but you don't understand why.
That's funny. That's really funny. Now, I've been following your Patreon progress. You made the software emulator, and have you started porting that over to Verilog yet, or are you still in the software testing phase?
So I'm porting already.
Oh, wow, that's so quick. That went very quickly.
I'm working on it now.
That's exciting.
I'm working on VHDL, not on Verilog. So this is
sorry. I keep getting this confused. Yeah.
No reason for that, but it's not that common, I would say. On the Mister, I would say it's maybe 70% or 80% Verilog. Most of the code is, also the whole framework is, but I'm still used to VHDL from my history. I worked 7 years as a VHDL developer full time, and only VHDL this time. So I will continue it.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to get into your background on this because I'm always so curious how people could even get the knowledge to start working on something like this. But I guess, so you've been working with this VHDL for a while for your main job, and that's how you're so familiar with it?
Yes, I started after my study as FPGA developer, and I did it for about 7 years, and then I switched to more software-related job. And when I switched, I had fun again with doing FPGA as a hobby. And before, I didn't have fun anymore. After 8 hours a day doing FPGA development, I didn't want to do it after work.
Yeah, I totally understand. There's some things that are just better off as hobbies, you know, and like I love doing retro RGB for a living. You know, there's some parts of it that kind of drive me nuts, you know, the social media trolls definitely. But for the most part, I just every day I really enjoy what I'm doing. But I know exactly what you mean, because I had some hobbies that I tried to do a little bit more full time. And I just went, man, this is taking the fun out of it. So I guess gaming would be like that for me. I find gaming fun and relaxing, but if I had to do it every day, all day as a job, I think I would get frustrated with it quickly. And I don't, you know, it's funny because I rarely get a chance to actually play games, even though what I do is based around them. But when I do, it's always a happy thing. So I kind of want to make sure I keep it that way, you know?
It's really important to still enjoy gaming. So when I was younger, I played for many years, a lot of hours every day. And today, it's really hard for me to motivate myself to play through a game again. So I always have, there's this project and the family and the job and everything, and I'm not really motivated. So when I see a new game, I really want to play it, but it takes 50 hours again. I just don't want to spend that much time. But on the other hand, I don't really like the games you pick up for 10 minutes. It's not the game type of game I like, so it's difficult today.
Yeah, you know, I think that's actually what draws a lot of people into retro gaming, even younger people that didn't grow up with any of this stuff. You know, they like gaming and they want to get into a certain style, but they also don't want to spend 60 hours to completion, you know, two or three max for one of the ones that you could just sit and play start to finish, or, you know, maybe 10 to 20 hours for some of the more adventure games. And we got a lot of that in the 16-bit era, but not really nowadays. Everything is a grind, it feels like. Even the games that don't really feel like they need to be. I think it was Twilight Princess, the Zelda game for the Wii, the second one. I can't remember. I think it was that one, but there was a giant chunk of the game that took hours that was basically just go back over where you were before to collect stuff that you don't even need. Like, you could tell they kind of added it in just to make the game feel longer. And it's just, it started to take the fun out of it. You know, I just wanted to stick with it. So you're right. A lot of newer games just, I feel like they're long just for the sake of being long. So that is why, another big reason why I'm always happy that the retro gaming scene's growing, because there's just thousands of games available for every genre that people might like that fit their needs better than what came out in the past 2 years. You know, and of course, there's some amazing new stuff too, but I just like that people now have the choice of whatever it is they feel like playing.
Yes, for me, it's much easier to play these long games with games I knew from as a child or teenager, because I already know how this game works, and it doesn't take me 30 hours anymore. I only need 5 or 6 because I already know it. So it's much easier then.
Yeah.
And still have this game which goes in depth.
Absolutely. And you don't have the extra time that you did as a kid, you know, when you're in school and you're not working, and, you know, you could totally play hours every day and it's not taking away from anything else in your life. And nowadays it's like, you know, once you hit adulthood, everything changes and, you know, your free time goes down very much.
Yeah.
When you were a kid, what were some of your favorite games to play?
So as a child, I played a lot of the Pokemon games. So when I grew up, the first generation of them came out on the Game Boy, and I spent a lot of time on that. And afterwards, I spent a lot of time on PC gaming, mainly games like Diablo, StarCraft, as a teenager. And after that, it was not much anymore.
That's cool. I mean, you just hit some really awesome games. So I think, you know, that was a cool answer. I'm just kind of always curious because everybody has their own approach on games. So it's funny to hear some people say their favorite game is like Mortal Kombat and Final Fantasy, because those are two wildly different games. But it's sometimes people just, I'm just always interested to see what connected with people and what their favorite games were and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, so I played a lot of other games in between. So I had a Nintendo 64 and played a lot of them, but all maybe not that much. I didn't spend really months with these games. It was more than 2 weeks maybe with one when it was new. So you had to buy them. It was expensive, so you need to at least play them for a few weeks. But it wasn't... It wouldn't keep me for so long.
Yeah. Yeah, that is one giant difference about playing games now versus playing games when I was a kid, in that, you know, I had to go to the store to rent one. I had to, you know, you got to look around and you get your friend's recommendations, or you try to judge by the label, and you get home and the game is terrible. And it's devastating because that was supposed to be your weekend, and you kind of force yourself to play it. And there were one or two that I couldn't even get 5 minutes into, and I just wasted my $10 for the weekend or something. But there were also a few others where, because I rented it, I forced myself to play it, and I actually really liked it after it kind of started out. But nowadays, if I played that same game for the first time and it was that bad for the first half hour, I would just shut it off and move on to the next. So there's something to be said for being stuck with a game that you rented or bought versus all the choices.
Yeah, it's much easier today to pick up a new game, and if it's not good, just get the next one. It's much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. So in your Patreon post after you finished the Lynx Core, you had mentioned looking into others. And I try to make it a point to never talk about future stuff, because I don't want to put pressure on developers, but you'd already openly talked about it, so I'm not outing you or anything. But you said you were going to look into the Virtual Boy as well. Do you know if it's even possible to run on the Mister, or are you not even at the stage of being able to tell?
So I would say from all the cores I posted there, the Wondrous One and the Virtual Boy are the ones which I was quite sure it's possible.
Oh,
so
wow.
From the hardware perspective, from the spec, it should be okay. So there are two main problems when putting some system to the Mister FPGA. So the first is the speed. So if there's a very fast processor inside, let's say Nintendo 64 with nearly 100 megahertz, so rebuilding that in this FPGA is nearly impossible, I would say. At least if you want to do it psychic accurate at exactly this speed. And the second one is the memory, which I learned from the Nintendo DS core where it didn't fit in. So I always check these two parts first. It can be very complex if you have a lot of different components, like in the PlayStation or the Saturn core that were worked on, with several processors and other components communicating with each other. So it's complicated. But the main reason to have it not working inside the Mr. FPGA, at least, is mainly the speed and memory size.
Interesting. Now, I know this is speculation and this is far in the future, so I know I probably shouldn't even be asking it, but I kind of have to. From something like the Virtual Boy, using what the Mister has to offer, is there any way to get 3D output? Now, I know stuff like the red and blue glasses, the anaglyph glasses, that's probably doable. But, you know, is there any other methods? Because I do think that there's a certain charm to the Virtual Boy's 3D graphics. And some of it's a little cheesy, but I think Wario did a great job. I really enjoyed that game. And I think there's still some others where you would still like the game if you played it just, you know, on a regular TV. But stuff like Bound High, that game, the whole purpose and perspective of the game is out the window if you just used it on a TV. So do you think there's any possibility of trying to get 3D output in any way possible from that?
So that's one of the reasons I didn't want to start this core, because of all the possibilities the users would want to have. Mm-hmm. So the first one would want to have side-by-side images. This is probably possible. So we can probably have this. So with HDMI output and some screen or whatever output device that can live with side-by-side images for 3D, for both images, we should be able to get this. But then you get the high-frequency modes where you have to do 120 hertz, for example, with this one, and then the different color modes. So mixing the red and blue together into one image, and all this different ways of outputting. And the next one wants only 2D with a good color palette, just instead of only red. So yeah, a lot of work afterwards outputting the calculated image. So I'm mainly interested in doing all this calculation part to get this image out of the core, but all the interfacing with different components, different TVs or shutter glasses or whatever you maybe need, I'm not really interested in that. It's such a huge area and takes a lot of time for, I would say, not too much benefit in the end.
Yeah, I think chasing things like active shutter glasses would require extra hardware on the Mister. So that's something that, you know, I wouldn't even consider that at the beginning, unless it was super easy somehow. But and even things like the modern 3D TVs, where it's the active shutter glasses for the flat panels, every one of those TVs could also do side by side. So side by side makes sense. The only reason I even mentioned the red blue glasses or any kind of polarization like that is just because that's compatible with every TV, but it doesn't look very good. I don't know the last time you ever tried that, but you know, when you're looking at a comic book when you were a kid with those glasses on was neat, but I there was a software emulator for Virtual Boy that added the red and blue glasses, and it just wasn't the same. It wasn't worth playing it that way. It was neat. I appreciated that the developer tried to add that, but I think if you were going to spend the time at that at all, it would probably just be the most popular method of side by side, and people with projectors or TVs just press the button and set it that way.
Yeah.
I did remember spending quite a lot of time with Mednafen, I believe, trying to set that up on my 3D TV 5 or 6 years ago. And the separation was never quite correct. It was always a lot of crosstalk, or it felt like it was just a 2D image. So that sounds like it would be a nightmare.
Yes, I guess that it's a lot of work. So if the emulators already struggle with it, it's not really easier in the FPGA to implement such features.
Yeah.
So
I have not tried the VR version of it yet, though. I know, I believe there is a VR software emulation. Yes. I have not tried that yet. And I borrowed a friend's HP VR helmet, and it was a pain to get it working. So one of these days, maybe I'll try a different helmet and different software and give it a try. But I'd like to see how that is, because if that's a decent experience, then people who really care about 3D could just use that way, you know?
I'm not sure how compatible this is with the Mista.
I didn't mean in the Mista. I just mean if somebody download a software emulator for it on your computer. Yeah.
Yes, I also found this emulator when doing the research to find out if it's accurate and if I can learn something from it.
What did you think of the emulator?
But I couldn't try it because it only works with the Oculus hardware. So I couldn't get it to run with my 2D screen, so no chance for me.
Do you have any VR helmets at all?
No.
Yeah. I don't own one either. I just borrowed that one. It was very neat, but I do like the technology, but not all of the games. Like a lot of the perspective of the game is I still get dizzy. The only one that I absolutely loved was a table tennis one. And I was able to connect to my friend online, and we were able to be, you know, he was in Connecticut, I'm in New York, so we're an hour and a half away. And we were playing virtual table tennis in front of each other. It was really neat. That was by far the best VR experience, because it actually felt like I was there and I didn't get dizzy looking around. Well, that was pretty cool. But I'm looking forward to see the future of VR. It's just not quite for me personally yet. I think I would spend most of my time playing a Virtual Boy emulator on it.
Yeah, I think it would be nice to try this out. I would really love it, but the motion sickness is a huge problem for me. So I just had one with a smartphone, something from a friend. I tried it, and it was a roller coaster or something like this, and I got sick in 10 seconds, and I thought, I will never try this again, this technology. It's just not for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I've played a bunch of games on VR, and that was mostly my experience. I think the frame rate might have a lot to do with it. I heard the next generation headsets are coming out are going to be much faster, but it's very disorienting when you move your head and you're just used to real life, and now you're kind of waiting for the visor to catch up with you. I get motion sick pretty bad with that, much more so than I do any other time in life. Like I get a little bit motion sick in the backseat of cars, but not like with the VR helmet that sends me right over. So,
yeah.
Well, that's cool. At least we have just being able to play a Virtual Boy without having to deal with all of this extra stuff that you have to do, you know, the ribbon cables that you have to repair because they all start to go after a while. I love the Virtual Boy, but it's going to be very nice to be able to just flip on a button on my Mister at some point and play it with or without 3D. So,
it's so convenient to have all this in one device today. So without all this different, even if the device is still okay. So if you have a console like the Super Nintendo, you can still play it. But Virtual, it's more difficult because it's not really easy to use, and you need some space for it. But with all those different consoles, to have them all recreated in one place, I think that's really helping me to use them. So, for example, I started a Commodore 64 game I knew as a child lately. So, I would never put up a Commodore 64 again. Even if I had it somewhere here, it would be just so much work and space, and I wouldn't have the motivation to start it at all.
And now you just plug in a USB keyboard and you're playing Commodore 64 on your flat panel as if it was, you know, as if it was the real thing.
Yes, because I'm always developing with it. It's always ready. I just need to plug it in and I can just try it. I don't play it on a big TV. It's just my monitor here, but that's okay for all the old games. The old TVs weren't that big at that time, so it's great.
It is funny to see graphics from consoles like the Atari 2600 on a 60-inch TV, because they were designed for your average TV that was, you know, 10 yeah. inches. So I do, I love CRTs. I don't know why. So I have quite a variety of them, and I like to pick and choose which CRT I play which games on when I, you know, when I have the opportunity. And smaller screens for Atari 2600 is pretty cool too. So you mentioned before complicated cores like the PS1 and the Saturn, where there's lots of chips running together. I wanted your opinion, and I want to make it clear, I'm not asking you to do this. I just wanted your opinion. Do you think something like the 32X would be possible to integrate into the Mister, or even 32X CD? Because that's certainly one console that has a bunch of really good games on it, and it is impossible to have a good 32X experience. In the past 2 years, I've had four. Each one has been recapped and refurbished. Each one is tested. All my friend Jose does all this for me because he's way better at this stuff than I am. And most of them don't work on half of my consoles. And some are modded, some are not modded. So it's not like the Sega triple bypass causes a problem. You know, I could have four stock original Genesis consoles and it works on three, but not one of them. So I really think that's one of those things that so many people would enjoy those games if they actually had a chance to play them. But I don't know if that's impossible. Is that, you know, is putting all of those chips into one core like that, or multiple cores or something, is that even something that's possible?
So I can't say for the 32X because I just don't know the system. I would need to look up what's inside. But having several components isn't a problem for the FPGA in terms of size, typically. Because even if you take, maybe not like the AO486, but if you take a usual CPU from that time, it would fit maybe 10 to 20 times into the FPGA.
Oh.
So it doesn't take too much space. For example, for the ARM core and the GBA, which is quite new, from it's not that old, a 32-bit mm-hmm. processor, and it would fit more than 10 times into the Mister FPGA. So having it there, it would fit, but you need to get everything correct. And it's mainly the work to do it. So doing two processor cores isn't just double work. It's way more, because you need to synchronize them. You need to connect them. They both access the memory. So something most emulators don't really think about. So if one is accessing the memory, the other can also. But not on the FPGA. They are on the same memory. So you need to have an arbiter in between. And you need to decide which one can access now, and that makes it very difficult to have this multiple components in the system. So, but in terms of space, it's usually not that big of a problem. I recently have seen that Sergey, working on the Saturn core, already has the FPGA nearly full, but he has lots of components inside. So I'm not sure about the Saturn, but I think he got all the processors already inside. Not complete, but they are in the FPGA. But I think it from the size it would fit, but to get all the memory handling and everything, it's not sure that these things will really fit in the end.
I really appreciate.
I really hope for the systems, or also for the PlayStation 2 to have this. But we always need to have in mind that the FPGA's internal memory is very small. It's less than 1 megabyte. So the consoles from this time frame already have several megabytes of RAM. So it all must be external, but the external RAM has some problems like latency, and it only is 16-bit access. So if a console has a RAM that is 32-bit or even wider or very fast, like the Nintendo 64 or such things, it's very difficult to do this in a way as it was on a real console. You can always do tricks to get around this. Like I did with the GBA core because I thought it was required. But if you don't want to do these tricks and you want to do it really in an accurate way, it's very difficult for this new console. So I have full respect to Sergey working on the Saturn core and also on the PlayStation development, getting this this working. It's really a lot of work.
Yeah, I really appreciate the perspective on that. That really, I feel like I understand a lot better the struggles that you all go through when you're making these amazing cores. So that's cool. It's not about the size. It's about what goes into making all of these things talk to each other. So that's interesting. Were there anything else looking to the future that you'd like to see on Mister, whether it's something you do or whether you just would like to see it on there or something? Is there, you know, anything that you had looking to the future, or are you just kind of taking stuff one step at a time and seeing where it all falls?
So I'm really not sure what the future brings now. I would be really happy if in some years we could get to a faster FPGA and mainly faster and a little bit more memory. So systems like the Nintendo 64, Nintendo DS could work there. And I also really want to have a faster PC core. So to have the first era of Pentium games working on there, that would be great.
That is pretty awesome. I think, you know, with all of the global part shortages, any hopes that we had for the next 2 years of these prices coming down are out the window. But maybe a few years from now, three or four years, when everything catches back up, whatever the next generation of DE10 is would be available at a decent price. I think we're all kind of hoping for that. But there's still just so much to enjoy on the current one. And, you know, as we talk, I always try to be clear that when we talk about what's coming next, that never discredits what's here now. So even if a bigger one with a 4K output that supports N64 and DS is out, doesn't make the current Mister any less amazing. It's still perfect in your arcade machines. It's still perfect on your TVs. So, you know, as a nerd, I always look to the future. I always want to work at what's coming next, but I just always want to make sure I, you know, remind everybody that just because we're talking about what's next doesn't mean what's now isn't amazing. I certainly love the project, and I'm very happy that I have one.
Yes, I guess from a user perspective, what we have now is perfect. For this price, to have all this course available, and it's really great. From a developer perspective, it would be really nice to be able to work on these things I would really like to work on. So it's currently not possible. I couldn't do it. But I would really like to do it someday in the future. I hope I'm still motivated in a few years when these new systems come out.
Yeah, it's funny to see how that, you know, it's funny to see how that is. You know, if you asked me 10 years ago when I started Retro RGB if I'd still be doing it, I'd probably be like, yeah, probably. You know, it's a fun hobby, and you know, I'd never guess that I've worked every day on this thing for the past couple of years. I still enjoy it, but so you never know what the future is going to bring. We'll see. Hopefully your current job and family life and everything will allow for that. I know it's very easy for life to get very busy and very complicated. So
yes, that's a huge part of why I could work so much on it recently. So with the job, with completely home office now, you don't have to drive to the workplace, drive back. It saves me at least 1.5 hours every day, so I can work at that time. Previously, that wasn't possible. So it really helps getting such things together with a full-time job.
Yeah, that's actually how I was able to start Retro RGB, is because I had a job that I had to be in front of my computer from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. You know, I could take a quick break, but if, you know, somebody needed me, I had to be there. And then I had a bunch of tasks that I had to complete, projects that I was building, things like that. But a lot of it was just making myself available. And I got bored immediately and just started, I think within a month of that job, I started Retro RGB. And because there was just so much where it's like, okay, I'm waiting for a new process to compile, press this button. All right, well, what am I going to do for the next 20 minutes? All right, let me write a couple of guides about my Super Nintendo. So if I didn't have that, there'd be no retro RGB because I would have never started it. So I think, you know, I like working in an office. I like working from home. But I think now I would choose to always work from home if I had to. And, you know, I love being around people. I love hanging out. You know, maybe if I ever had to do a different job, it would be work from home, but still go in the office a couple times a month or something like that. But I definitely, and I'm so much more productive at home. I don't know about you, but for me, there are some days like you wake up and you're just not, you're not at 100%. And when I'm working from home, it's like, okay, well, I could do laundry, clean the apartment, wash some dishes. Next thing you know, a couple hours go by and I'm back. I'm happy. And so I just work from noon till 8 or 9 p.m. rather than, you know, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Whereas when I'm at a job, if I'm kind of sleepy until noon, that whole day is wasted, that whole morning at least. So I definitely find myself way more productive this way.
Yeah, especially the time to start and when you end. So I'm usually very productive from very early on, but after lunch and afternoon, it really gets down. And I could start again maybe at 8 p.m. and I could work deep into the night, and it would be possible. And I did this with some of the work I did, especially with the GBA core. When I worked on it, I spent endless hours into the night fixing some problem. I've seen it. I need to fix it. I cannot sleep before I fix it. So I need to stay up too late. So, but in between, it's difficult for me. So with this new situation, it works far better for me. So I also noticed that with colleagues, and it was great progress also at work. Also, not only with the hobby here and the Mr. Project, but also at work, it was really, the team was getting forward much faster since everyone's working from home.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a standing desk, or do you prefer to sit? Because that's something that's kind of become more popular. And I started standing just because I hurt my back a couple of years ago. It's totally healed, but I got used to standing. So now almost all of the work I do, I do on my standing desk. The only thing I can't really do is write scripts. Like when I'm trying to get into it and try to do a good description, I have to sit down. I don't know why. I can't concentrate super hard while standing.
So it's a little bit difficult here because I only have one place. So I have one place where I work, and I also use the same computer when I, let's say, if I play a game, I use the same one. And if I surf in a web, I use the same computer. So I always sit here. I would like to switch, but it's not really practical to do it in a situation here.
Yeah, me neither. That's why this that I'm standing on now, it's actually a bunch of plastic drawers with an adjustable top on it, but it's standing only. I could never put it down. And the setup that I have here, I could never do that. I would like both. I sit on my kitchen table when I need to sit. But so, yeah, you're right. Unless you have an extra space or you're willing to buy a whole new setup, which is pretty expensive, you kind of got to pick one or the other. So that's why I just stuck with standing, because I figured it was better overall. And I'm kind of fat, so anytime I could stand and get more exercise is always a help. So, well, just thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us here. You know, it was really insightful hearing your perspective on a lot of this stuff. I've been following your work. I'm so sorry. I completely forgot that you were the developer behind the Game Boy Advance project. I even wrote an article about it and talked about it on one of my podcasts. And it's just so much going on, so many people I talk to. But I've been following your work since then, and just a big fan of everything you and the whole Mr. Team does. And I think people are really going to enjoy hearing from you and hearing your thoughts on this.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, we will definitely do this again at some point. This was a lot of fun, and I will I'll let everybody know and keep everybody updated as to your core's progress and when they're released and all that stuff. And maybe I'll do an Atari Lynx stream at one point soon, so people could kind of go through the game library with me on the Mr. Core.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks Thank very you. Much. I'll talk to you soon.